Hi there, and thanks for tuning into the Ask a Private Lender podcast. As always, I'm Lawrence from Mortgage Automator, your host, joined by our co-host, Joseph Fuchs. Today, we have a very special guest joining us, Blake Albright, founder and managing director of Bright Path Capital, one of Ontario's fastest growing private lenders. Blake basically runs the show over there, so we're really happy to have him joining us today. Blake, thank you for stopping by. Sir.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is great. No, that's very kind. It's a kind intro. I appreciate it.
No, really well, excited to have you on board, man.
Really excited to have you. Now, the first thing we always ask our guests, private lending is a really interesting business. It's not something people typically jump into. You know, they go to school and now I want to be a private lender. We're interested about your story. How did you get into it? You know, what did you originally go to school for? What did you want to do? And how did you end up where you are?
Yeah. No, it's an interesting space for sure. I think I've constantly looked for different opportunities in different markets, you know, in the past, you know, say 15, 20 years now at this point. And I would say the, you know, private lending fills a unique niche, and it always has in Canada. It's just been a little more prevalently, you know, or more commonly referred to, I think, in the last couple. And so maybe this is a more apt topic for now. For me, it was, you know, a university stock market competition in first year where I just found that, you know, this is a tech bubble type time and there's lots of interesting things happening. And, you know, you could do quite well in that market without, you know, without a lot of experience and without a lot of, you know, for lack of a better word, with just luck, I guess would be the way I'd refer to it. And so I tried to find some other ways to use my capital. I had a student line of credit at the time. I had an opportunity to deploy some of that money, came across a couple mortgage brokers, tried it out, enjoyed kind of looking at the deals and did quite well on the actual return side of it. So, thought, you know, put it on the back burner as something I'd approach in the future. And, you know, for me, a time in my career came where I was, in an accounting type of role and didn't particularly enjoy that, but I like doing deals, like doing transactions. You know, thought maybe let's try and see if we can, you know, pull some investors together and start something up. And, you know, here we are, you know, 5 years later. So, it's been a good ride. And I like having conversations like this about it because not a lot of people know what it actually entails.
Very cool. So just to touch on what you're saying. So you stock market competition, I would gather you probably did pretty well. I mean, you're a great guy.
Yeah. But with not a lot of strategy. Let's say there wasn't a lot of strategy. You could buy and sell, you know, say RIM just on a daily basis and do quite well at the time. So
at the time, RIM at the time,
at the time.
I would agree with that.
If you sold.
So you start off as just an investor. You were investing in these loans. You saw an opportunity. Yep. You ended up starting a business. But like you were just looking up for random opportunities and this came about, or did someone tell you about private lending? You know, is it a family thing? Like,
no, I would say, yeah, I happened to be introduced to somebody who was in the space and doing it on a very casual level. Like the reason why I got really into it is I quickly realized when dealing with a couple mortgage brokers was a very, you know, more so, you know, 15 years ago, but more disjointed industry than it should be. You know, there hadn't been a lot of consolidation in terms of partnerships by private lenders, you'd be looking at a lot of one-off situations. This you know, a farmer that had a bunch of land that sold some of it that had some excess capital that wanted to deploy it, or, you know, people that, you know, had, you know, done well on a business sale or things like that would be one-offs. They'd get in contact with a lawyer or a mortgage broker. That broker's going through his Rolodex and making phone calls to see who has 100 grand this week to fund a loan. And it's just, you know, to me that was an illogical way of doing business. I'd obviously learned a little bit of the tricks of the trade before you could start to apply some of those ideas, but it just seemed illogical that's how the industry operated.
Very interesting. And just so people know, Bright Path Capital, you guys are direct to consumer or do you deal with brokers?
I would say 97% of our business is through brokers. I'm a licensed broker. We have a brokerage license. But that's more for dealing with, I wouldn't say we get walk-ins off the street in our office to deal with mortgages, more, you know, people in my network or in my partner's network who had done mortgages with us in the past, who might need help, who might be referred through or someone referred through them. Otherwise I'm dealing with mortgage brokers most of the time. We were obviously very reliant on that group of people for our business. They're having a good broker relationship is the most important part.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you say that because a lot of people who go into this business, they tend to organically sort of move over from the brokering side because they had some involvement in some capacity. And then slowly, if they have the right connections or they just like that side of the business, they start to move over into the private lending space. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because your story is you just sort of dove in head first right into the private lending space right away. And I commend you for that because a lot of people I don't think would have the cojones to do something like that. So no, kudos to you. And it's incredible to see how quickly you have grown the business and that you have made such a positive name for yourself in the industry. So really excited to see what you guys will keep doing moving forward.
Everyone knows BrightPath, right? And that's why I think it's important to do these things. Yeah, I mean, you know, and listen, we talk to a lot of private lenders. Right. Sure. Like, but no, everyone that I've spoken to at least has positive things to say about the way you guys operate and run your business. On the broker side of things, can any broker call you to submit a deal? Are there only certain brokers you deal with? Like, you know, give us a little bit of an insight as to like, what are you looking for in a broker to, you know, do business with? Anything in particular, or is it just pick up the phone, call Blake, call maybe a BDM on your team? And go from there.
Yeah. No, I would say we added Dan Pauls as a BDM at the beginning, I guess the end of last year, beginning of this year, kind of an interesting time in the market, obviously, given the developments the past few months for a BDM to do his job properly. But he'd been in the industry for about 22 years. And that was obviously a great addition. It brought with it a set of relationships in the private space, in the credit union space, in the bank space that we had not had previously on staff. And you know, previous to that, I would say we were almost exclusively marketing on, you know, electronically, maybe the occasional trade show to get our deal flow. Obviously bringing Dan on board has been very helpful in getting a whole different group of perhaps more A brokers or more up the chain than we typically would see deals from. For us, we're happy to deal with almost anybody. You know, we just like dealing with good people, and there's no secret magic password you need to get to work with us. It's more, you know, send a reasonable transaction in. Don't have eight co-brokers on the deal working together on something that never gets done properly. Like, you know, be right. A reasonable person about how you deal with it. And, you know, we do find that we get one-offs like that occasionally. It's an 80-20 business, like a lot of things. And we see a lot of our deals from the same core group of brokers. And then we have other brokers who just don't do a ton of private. So you'll see a couple deals a year from them, but they're still, you know, they still know how to put a file together, and it's still very, you know, fruitful for everybody. You know, Mortgage Automator has obviously helped us too. Just getting on Phylogics here recently, it's been a whole different chain of business that we would have. You know, there's a bunch of new brokers in that panel that, you know, if you can't submit through Phylogics, they're not interested in working with you. And so obviously that's been a big change for us, and we're still sifting through the data on that, given it's so new. But you know, the early returns are quite promising there for our sources of deal flow.
You've jumped on Phylogics. You were one of the early adopters of it. Obviously, you're forward thinking. You're looking to try to make your business as efficient as possible.
For sure.
Would you say being just available on Phylogics has just provided that extra bit of branding or free marketing that maybe you wouldn't have seen just from having BDMs call or brokers finding you through your digital email marketing campaigns?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I would just having it in the brokers working in that system every day, and you know, a good proportion of brokers anyway, not necessarily all of them, but you know, having that ability where they're already in the software to go through and just click a box and it sends us a file is a lot. It sounds, you know, fairly simple to, you know, PDF print a couple things and email them over to your underwriting inbox or your BDM at any given time, but that little extra layer that helps them do it, you know, in a much more simple way has certainly been good for us so far. We get a lot of positive feedback. Being able to put that outcome in an email and send it out via marketing has been helpful. Oh, well, take a little screenshot of our name in that system is quite cool.
For sure. Being in the private lending space for such a long time, any interesting stories you have? Obviously, no names or anything like that. Have you been hit with fraud before? Has that ever happened? Has that ever crept up? Anything you can tell us?
Yeah, we've had a few interesting ones come along. We've had like really small loans, like you know, somebody wants, like when we have a minimum fee of $2,000 and someone wants to borrow like $7,000, I always find that interesting. It doesn't make any sense, but okay, sure. I'll give you an example of one. Like there was a property in Richmond Hill, and we had had a deal with this person for about it was a 1-year term. We didn't offer a renewal. It was coming up on 18 months in, and we're very close to the eviction date on a power of sale. And this person had constantly said, I'm paying it out this week. I'm paying it out this week. And so we get to the Friday, and the eviction scheduled for 9:30 in the morning on Monday morning. Sheriff's booked, like it's good to go. And then she keeps insisting that her and her dad is going to come in and pay off the loan this afternoon to my lawyer's office. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. It'd be great, but I highly doubt that's given what you told us previously. And so, we get her on the phone around 1:00. She's like, he's just getting his hair cut right now. We're going to go in after that. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's priorities are very clear here. We're getting our hair cut.
Right.
And sure enough, at 4:30 that afternoon, this guy shows up with about $450,000 bank draft to my lawyer office to pay out this loan that was going, like, we could barely get the sheriff's office on the phone before they closed to cancel the appointment for Monday morning when this happened.
Oh my goodness.
Subsequent to that, I would say that there was some legal action, and there's some other stuff that happened on that file, but that had happened previous to us being involved over a number of years. And so that one is still the most odd one I've seen. Obviously thankful that we were able to recover our principal on that one and wipe our hands of it. And, we're acting through brokers and, insurance and things like that to cover ourselves. But, there's other people involved in that file that maybe weren't so, so clean with how they operated.
Right.
Think that's, for us, that's the biggest thing for me, having the brokerage license and, that piece as well, regardless of your actions on a file. Like, I always thought being licensed was the proper way to handle it, because then you're insured and you're handling things well, and you're above board from a regulations perspective with whether that be the FSCA or FSRA now. There's no point. The rules aren't that hard to follow. We just try to play within the box we're given here. So
that's a crazy story. If you're at the point of eviction, it means this has been going on for a little while now.
Yeah, we were into 6 months on that post maturity for sure.
Yeah,
and
guy's getting a haircut. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like I get it's important to have fresh hair. Don't get me wrong, but
writing a check on your daughter's property because she just ran up a second mortgage is just, I find that interesting. So
that's what I'm thinking. Like you'd think that the daughter went to him 3 months prior, five. Like give me 10,000, give me 30,000, give me 100. Like.
People's levels of motivation based on urgency are very different, I find. Some people get that, like if there's one thing wrong in their life, that urgency is built up. Other people, I think, really need a big push, and they don't really believe that the negative stuff's going to happen until it's about to happen.
Crazy,
so that's
crazy.
It's different. It's certainly a different world.
For sure. So obviously you've been in the money management game for a while. One thing that I always like to ask is, growing up, were you taught financial literacy from your parents? Was it something that you learned over time? How did you figure it out?
Yeah, no, I would say probably not well enough. I've always been an advocate that I can't believe there isn't a course in high school that tells people like what a mortgage is and how interest works on payments. But we have some of the most ridiculous classes of all time that are required. We had a civics and a careers course, but we didn't have a financial literacy course for high school students is beyond me. When the government wants to pay me to write that curriculum, I'm happy to help on that one. But I would say, I grew up, my mom was single as of, my dad died when I was 9. So it was an interesting time. And so obviously that comes with its, she wasn't working at the time. You deal with a whole, but you get an influx of cash typically if there's some sort of coverage on that in your life. And so managing that through that situation is always interesting because some people handle that really well and some people handle that poorly when they're giving a lump sum of money. I would just say that, I realized that I didn't want to do something with my life that required a lot of, physical exertion in the long run. And that managing capital was one way you could avoid doing that.
Yeah.
And so, you put your time in as a landscaper for enough years in the summers of university, you figure out what you want to do with your time. And being financially literate came pretty quickly when that situation was presented to me. So I wish I had been more prepared, but thankfully I was able to pick it up enough at least to get myself to this point. So
see, you say high school, right? I could see why they don't teach it in high school. Fair enough.
Okay.
But to not have anything mandatory university, where kids come out of school at 21, 22, in debt most of the time, and still financially equally, if not more, irresponsible now with this weird assumption that now they have a piece of paper, they're entitled to get a job right away. And I think that's where it's really interesting. I would say I think that it should start in high school, but it should absolutely continue on because I'm sure you see your fair share of people who are twice your age who are still financially irresponsible, who still don't understand what's going on and can't figure it out.
I would say, you know, it's certainly a portion of our client base that is that, right? Like you always have the clients that are, you know, some sort of hardship has happened, you know, a death in the family, a health issue. You know, there's lots of reasons, divorce, whatever. And there's the bridge type loans, and there's the self-employed people that maybe, you know, are just getting a business started, or they don't love paying taxes or whatever the reason may be. But there certainly is a decent sized portion of that clientele too, that are just, you know, poor consumers of things in life, poor with credit generally. Right. And that's certainly it's unfortunate because those are the people, fortunate for us, I guess, in the sense that we're able to help a lot of those people. But, you know, ideally your house is probably your best investment for a lot of people in Canada, and for you to blow through that equity because you made some bad decisions with a TV purchase is not super encouraging from a society perspective, I don't think.
I always love it when people say, I remember this was back in the day, yeah, you know what, this whole getting the second mortgage has been really stressful on me. I think I'm going to go on vacation for a week.
Yeah.
And I say, I think that's a great idea. You just spent a bunch of money borrowing money at a very expensive rate. You should totally use that money and go on vacation. And in 12 months, before you know it, it's now come time for maturity and you have no way of paying that money back. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, it seems like a really good strategy. Eh? No, I would say the university piece is interesting in that sense, just because like it's government funded, but it's also the government's also writing the loans to a lot of these people or guaranteeing these side of the loans that the banks are writing. So the fact, like, it's kind of a nice big circle they've created here where they, you know, and it's not like they make a ton of interest on that money where they could make more in theory. Anyway, that's an aside.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I always say, like, when I got to university, and I don't even know how old you are in university, maybe 18 or 19, whatever the age is.
19. But
I'm walking through university and I see these booths are set up, MBNA Canada, right? Yeah. Like all of these credit card companies, and they're giving kids credit cards and then not teaching them what to do with them. Right. And, you know, I remember I got one in university and I said this story 10 times, but I went home and I showed my father, hey, look, I got my credit card, my first credit card. And he said, the only thing you have to remember is you're either going to pay it off at the end of every month, or you have some serious problems. That's it. That's all he said to me. And I pay it off every month, because people don't understand that if you charge $3,000 to your credit card and you pay off even $2,000 of it, they're still charging you interest on the full $3,000. Like it's an ongoing cycle. It's not fun if you don't know how it all works.
It's not free money.
It's not free money, unfortunately.
I'm pretty sure the people in the kiosk booths that sell those cards say you don't have to worry about paying for a long time. It's fine.
Yeah,
low exactly. Introductory interest rates, interest free. It's easy. You're a student. Yeah. Go have fun. Go enjoy.
pay it back later.
Yeah, exactly. So you've been in the financial game for a while, and over the years, I'm sure you've dealt with some really wealthy people, right? As most people in your position would, whether they have millions or tens of millions or whatever the number is. Is there any pieces of advice or anything that you've learned from these individuals where you could say, yeah, I see why this person has a lot of money, or why they're able to hold on to that money? Anything interesting, any tips or any advice that you can share with our listeners?
Yeah, I would say, I wouldn't call it advice because I don't, you know, pretend to be that as wealthy as these people are, let's say that. But the best ones that I see are the guys that are less, they're less intense about their investment decisions generally. I find the people that I end up working with that are more intense about, they want to come and sit in my office and ask me what mortgages we're doing today, generally don't have that much cash to begin with, unless they're being very protective of it. You know, that also might then hold that person back from growing that base, because you're not going to make any money without taking any risks. That's just not how the world works. The people that have generally said, yeah, I like the model, they want to have a 30-minute phone call and then they're going to try it out, are generally the ones that I'm like, yeah, that person's probably pretty successful, because they know how to take risks. They've probably lost money too, and they've learned a lot from that, but then they're using a little bit of gut feel and a little bit of general analysis, and, you know, feeling good about their decision and going with it, and, you know, either, you know, take it or leave it and move forward. Generally leaves you a lot more time to enjoy your life, but also analyze other things that you can do rather than overdoing it. And that's generally the feedback. The people that have stayed with us and have been with us since the beginning are generally like that. You know, we don't get a lot of withdrawals from our fund, but when we do, it's generally someone who probably overallocated in a decision, you know, decision-making process at the time, and then has, you know, always is then worried about that money. And frankly, it's like, you know, if you're investing in the stock market, you have a long time horizon, same concept. Like, it's, you know, you can, either forget about it, or you can think about it every single day and look it up every 5 minutes and keep refreshing that ticker if you really want to. You drive yourself pretty crazy doing that, I imagine. In our game, obviously, there's not a lot of liquidity and not a lot of price changes, but you're either going to feel good about it or you're not. So I would say, you know, make a decision and stick with it would be my.
I was definitely that guy when it came to cryptocurrency. You know, I was a genius. I got in right at the top, and every day I'm refreshing what's going on with my money, and now it's all gone. That was a fun time, actually. Yeah. But
my accountant, for anyone listening, and he same thing. Like, and this is not a he's a fairly conservative guy. This is one of my accounts, so I would say this is one of them, so it would be not someone that people could then refer to based on this podcast. But I remember at one point he's sitting on like 150 grand. I'm like, buddy, when are you gonna take some of that off the table? No, it's going to $1 million. It's going to a million bucks for sure.
So if I haven't lost anything yet because I haven't sold anything. That's the key.
True.
Unrealized.
Lori, we're right. Still sitting on a gold mine 20 years from now. Just remember that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's funny. Lori says something really interesting. He says, I'd rather lose every penny than sell and walk out with $3,000. Because I'd rather just lose every dollar. Rather lose it all. And I said, true. Okay. I'll go along for the ride, sure. And we've so far technically lost almost everything. I think we're down to like 6 cents.
That 3,000 is like another new set of irons, though. You could have got yourself there.
That's true.
Listen, here's the thing, though. I look at it like gambling. I like gambling, actually. I think it's fun. But mm-hmm. I only play with what I feel comfortable losing, right? So the time I figured, yeah, I'll throw some in. If I make some, great. If I lose it, that's okay, too. But I think that you have to have that mentality when you're doing something crazy like that. And not to the extent of investing, I don't think, in mortgages, but mortgage investments are not 100% guaranteed you'll never lose a dollar. That's just, it's an investment, right? And it's why it's not a GIC at less than 1%, because there is a little bit of risk. But I look at this risk and I say that the reward is out of whack with the amount of risk you're actually taking. I feel like you're taking a minimal amount of risk for a really big reward, you know, in this market. And obviously you feel the same way because you're in the business, and you know, 100%. The people who invest feel the same way. I think it's one of the best investments that you can make, and it's not a get rich quick thing.
Right.
People who are looking for get rich quick, you're not going to get
crypto.
You're not going to get rich with mortgage investments in a very short period of time. I feel like it's a slow and steady wins the race at the end of the day. You're going to keep accumulating wealth year after year after year in these safe investments. And when you wake up 20 years down the line, you're going to say, Blake did a great job for me, and I'm really happy we got involved with BrightPath or whoever, whatever the company is.
Well, I think the trick is like the compounding, right? The compounding effect. If you just let it keep accumulating and don't spend the money that you're earning or winning or making on the interest, just let it continue to reinvest that. Now you're earning interest on top of interest. That's where I think we ran the number. If you invest 100,000 at 10%, I think within 5.5 years, you can double that money if you just reinvested it all, just recompound it. That's a pretty good ROI on your, and if you're playing with like $1 million,
it's five years, right?
You could pretty much double your money and then double it again in another 5 years. So if you can somehow stock away, even by 40, and I know that's a pretty early number, but if by 40 you could suck away $1 million in liquid cash, you could have a few million dollars saved up by the time you're 60. And then by then you're pretty much laughing. And once you're already exposed to that industry and that game, you don't have to worry about anything else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the people who jump in, I feel like even the new people, right? They jump in, they want to invest, and they get hooked because it's such a great investment. And they get excited and they want to hear from you, right? They want to see what the next 100%. Deal is or what's going on. But
well, I think if you think about it though, like Blake says, I have loans on these properties. You can drive by the property, you can look at it, you can touch it, you can do whatever you want. You can throw a rock at the guy's window if you want. Just don't break it. But
yeah,
you know, that's I think what makes people comfortable. Whereas I think when you're throwing money into stocks, and you're that little ant that's throwing their tiny bit of investment, there are big people who are manipulating the market, making it do what they want it to do. And if you're hopefully on the right side of it, then great. If you're not, it could just be bad news bears. And so I think that's why I like the real estate, because I think over time it's proven that with its ups and downs, if you stay in it long term, you're going to do okay.
We have a segment called Would You Rather? And this is about the types of deals that BrightPath would prefer to take. you may say BrightPath likes all this stuff, send it all, but it's just to give people an idea is like, what is your, what do you call it, Joe? Your candy cream deals. What is that?
Candy cream pie with chocolate syrup on top.
There you go. Your candy cream pie with chocolate syrup on top deals. Okay. So would BrightPath prefer low loan to value deals, extremely low loan to value deals with borrowers that have horrific credit and no income? Or are you guys of the mind that I'd rather take a higher risk exposure in terms of loan to value? So call it 75, 80, but the guy has tremendous credit, great income. What would you guys prefer? You may take both, but what would you prefer?
Assuming your ROI was similar.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So yeah, I would say that the ROI unfortunately isn't similar, and that's why we have to choose option two. Like certainly I wouldn't want a position that we're in a business, you know, the business of selling properties to recover our capital. I would say that's not really generally our strategy. So, you know, option one, you know, that's going to usually be the, not usually be the outcome, but like someone else is refining me out, which typically, you know, we're not usually being paid out by a lot of other competitors. We're usually, you know, being paid out by a one-off private because they know somebody.
Right.
We're typically higher up the LTV chain with, you know, with the higher credit score for that reason. The ROI being the number one, like there's just so much competition at the lower level, and our investors are used to a, you know, let's say slightly higher level of return than most people in this industry are paying. And as a result,
sure.
You know, we need to play at the higher end of the spectrum to be competitive and to be able to pay our investors what they expect and still, you know, make a profit. So I would say that's kind of where we would choose that option. We're pretty used to that space. No problem. 75, 80, even 85% with people that, with decent credit. So
very cool. Next, the next one is, would you rather lend on like a $1 million house in the suburbs or like a $4 million house in the city? What's your wheelhouse? Do you like the less expensive houses, more expensive houses in the city? What's your deal?
So only about 25% of our books in the GTA. So we're definitely more of the alternative locations as well. So we would definitely choose, you know, the $1 million house in the suburbs. Maybe not some of the Toronto suburbs. I might prefer actually to be in the city on the $4 million house just because I feel better about the values. But, you know, if you told me $1 million house in Kitchener versus, you know, a house in downtown for $4 million, I'm going to choose the Kitchener one 10 out of 10 times.
Right. And you feel more comfortable with that market.
Yeah, for sure.
And the last question you kind of answered on the first one is,
yeah, I was going to say,
you know, you would rather go up to the higher loan to values that you feel comfortable with to get that extra ROI, to get that extra return. Right. So like, you know, you'd rather your 85 at the higher rate than the 70 at the lower rate, because you just feel comfortable with that risk exposure anyways, that you're always looking to get that little extra, which that makes sense to me. That's a strategy that you have, and I think it's a good one. What about like in terms of loan sizes? Would you rather write like 10 deals at like 100K each, or like one deal at a million? Rates, all that's the same. I'm saying, would you rather a lot or?
Yeah, we typically write a lot. Our average deal size would be rather small relative to a lot of the guys running in Toronto, for sure. We're definitely more comfortable with a bunch of small loans. From an investor perspective, I've got a lot of different types of properties, a lot of different locations. I'm quite diversified on that. And I do find it's harder to sell a larger fee as you go up the overall dollar size of the loan. Just, you know, it's easier to sell that smaller number across many loans.
I tend to agree.
We typically do a little bit better on the ROI just because of that.
And you may have a piece of software to help you with all those loans too.
Yes.
Just to make it really efficient and just crank them out one by one.
Well, you don't, when, you know, Excel wise, it was tight. It became a little bit much for sure. The Google Sheets were a little overwhelming.
For sure. And for brokers listening, they're tuning in. And you know, we're partnered with like Phylogix and Lendex and all these broker platforms. You know, the idea is to get this distributed across, you know, through all those networks to all of the brokers. So I'm sure there's going to be a lot of brokers listening that, you know, maybe haven't heard of BrightPath. For those people, tell them a little bit about BrightPath, what kind of deals you're looking for. If you want to provide rates and fees, you can. If not, that's okay. They can call you and find out on a loan by loan basis, but just give them the goods.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're a non-GTA based lender. Look, we're based in Waterloo, Ontario. And so we're focusing on kind of the Southwestern Ontario market. We do a lot of business in Ottawa. We do some business in the GTA. We do pretty much any market, you know, that has more than 50,000 people in it, and probably some that don't. have 50,000. I would say that we're a pretty good bundle partner for a lot of people on larger loan to value firsts and second combos. That's kind of our space that we play in, you know, quite frequently. We do a lot of, you know, first, second combo deals in these areas with lenders that maybe are a little bit cheaper on the front side. You know, we're going to be, you know, in the high single digits fee rate combo on a first to 75-80. And then, you know, in the mid to high teens on a second to 80-85. Again, location and you know, we do care, you know, about the credit score piece of it as well. You know, we're always sitting on capital because, frankly, we have a lot of partners that are interested in the first side. So it doesn't actually require me to put a ton of money out to make a lot of these transactions happen. But our space is pretty comfortable with that. You know, I don't necessarily prefer lease land deals and things like that. But generally, most transactions, if you've got a residential property in Ontario in a decent location and, you know, the story makes sense that we're getting from the broker, we'll probably look at anything. We're used to not being the first person that gets asked to look at a deal. So you know, okay. We're used to seeing a deal with someone else's name on it. That doesn't deter us. You know, people decline deals for lots of different reasons. We're not going to generally outright decline something unless, you know, the story just doesn't make sense, frankly, or the, you know, the type of deal, type of property, type of location is just, you know, not compatible with what we can do.
So you can find Bright Path on the Phylogix drop down under the private lender section. Alternatively, they can call your BDM Dan Pauls, right?
Yeah, so Dan is generally around. Dan can be reached on his cell at any point. He's still available for Zoom meetings for new brokers. He'll send you a more detailed rate sheet and brochure about what we actually can do for clients. You know, he's done a couple face-to-face meetings since things have been, you know, somewhat back to normal as well. So if you're open to that, he's up and coming as well. So. Yeah.
And you guys are in the Kitchener-Waterloo area. Where is the office actually? Where are you?
We are right on King Street in Uptown Waterloo, you know, right at the kind of main center, 9 King Street North. So, you know, if you've been to Waterloo, you might know where that is. You know, the beer town is a great location reference point for a lot of people in this area.
Okay.
So all right. It's a nice little spot. You know, it's a nice little walkable community. We've got a good staff of 7 people in here on a daily basis, and we're ready to help out. So.
And why awesome. I ask, I'm a pizza guy. Right. I'm a big pizza guy, right? And I like to try different places. You know, you're in Waterloo. What's the spot? Where do you got to go?
So it depends on what you're looking for. Like, I went to Casa Rigantino with my wife on Saturday night. That's more of the traditional Italian style, but there's also a Famoso next door to us, which is a lot of people like the thin crust. That franchise started out in Calgary, I believe. I don't know that you have one in Toronto. You might have one in Toronto, but they tend to pick alternative locations too.
Doesn't ring a bell.
So it's an interesting
Famoso.
Famoso, yeah. Famoso. So that's that. That probably, like, if you were here, first of all, we could just walk down the street. It's quite easy to get to. But that's all they really do. And it's that very thin crust, you know, margarita style.
I love it.
Stone oven.
Sounds delicious.
Going to make the list.
Okay. All right.
So, Blake, listen, we really appreciate you dropping by. I think it's been really informative. I think brokers, you know, you heard it from Blake first. You may not be the first call, but you may be the last call because you're into those deals and you're willing to look at things that maybe other people aren't. And I think that that's a really big positive in the market because, you know, there's a lot of people looking to get deals done and they don't know where to turn. So if you're one of those people, Bright Path Capital, they may be your go-to moving forward. I want to thank everyone for listening and tuning in today. Don't forget, you can follow Mortgage Automator on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. We're Automator Group on Twitter as well. Go to askaprivatelender.com to check out all of our latest podcast episodes, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Blake, thanks again. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Blake. Thank you.
Take care.